It's time to get nerdy, y'all.
A little bit of gaming history for you.
Something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it.
Should we kick it out of here or should we kickstart it?
This is the part where you, the listeners, try to stump the hosts.
I'm not a lawyer. I just play one on a podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, lads and lasses of all ages, welcome to the show. It is Monday, April 20th, 2026, and it is time to get nerdy. Welcome to episode 375 of Two Nerds in a Pod, the nerdiest gaming podcast in the multiverse. I am Mac, and I am joined by my friend. He is the first option. He's also the best option. He's Mr. Lam Galuga, also known as Mr. Nice Guy 425. And for the next hour, we are going to cover topics ranging from news, history, trivia, lawsuits, and everything in between as they relate to our favorite hobby, that is video gaming. But first, Mr. Nice Guy, it's been a couple of weeks. How you doing, Lom?
You know what, man? I'm doing awesome. Survived the tornadoes in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
That was a big deal. We were talking about that before the show. One touchdown, probably 15, 20 minutes from where I live. But you know what? We didn't get any water in the house. We didn't even lose power. We lost internet, which if you ask my kids, that was like catastrophic. 5 minutes of not being able to stream the movie we were watching in the basement. But other than that, man, doing a lot of gaming. This week is the Midwest Gaming Classic here in Milwaukee. I am actually skipping it to do some other things that I'll talk about next week. But shout out to all those who are going. I know they're going to have some really cool tournaments. I know there's going to be some cool stuff going on, 25th anniversary. So check that out if you're local. Mac, what is new with you?
Dude, man, not too frightfully much. Something that I'm sure I'll talk about next week as well. I've got some people coming over to visit, so that should be fun.
Nice!
Let's see. Man, this last couple of weeks, didn't do all that much out of the ordinary. Just kind of did the usual thing. I did, however, have the dreaded check engine light rear its ugly head.
Oh, no.
Yes, yes. One of the downsides of driving as much as we do is that you're always going to have it come out at some point in time. But thankfully, I've got an old enough car that I can do most of the repairs on my own. And so some fuel injectors and we're off to the races again. But it was a little touch and go for a few minutes there.
Okay, Dr. Light, you say that like it's an easy thing to do. It actually sounds like giving Mega Man X an upgrade. It sounds complicated. Fuel injectors.
Hey, it is way less complicated than you think. I think almost anybody could do it. And if you're lucky enough to have a car that's easy to work on, it can be with just, you know, no specialty tools whatsoever. So, like, you could knock it out in 20 minutes. Easy. All that is to say that that was probably the most exciting little journey from the last week. Aside from some fun video games, and maybe one other real fun thing, and that is that today we had a new world record holder for the Chasm Any% speedrun.
No way! As of today!
As of today! So shout out to CWX. He wound up dropping the record by, by about 10 seconds or so. Still probably some improvement. Might actually get it to the sub 1 hour at some point in time.
Wow.
But yeah, looking forward to that.
Now, were you the record holder before?
For the briefest period of time, I was after the game came out, and then somebody else came along and, you know, chunked like 5-6 minutes off of my time. I am, however, the one who handles the speedrun leaderboards. So, like, I can run it pretty fast, but I don't want to be the one who runs the board and also the one who holds the record.
Sure, makes sense.
I think I'm gonna try and put something on the board and shoot for second or third place because
nice.
I want to have something on the board, and now mine is bumped off, but I get it, man. You know what? I probably couldn't even do it if I wanted to, Mr. Nice Guy. These people are just so much better than I am.
Well, let's talk about something that we're both good at. Why don't we talk about some gaming news, Mac? What do you think about that?
Well, I don't know if we're both good at it, but I know that you are fantastic about it, and I want to hear about it. Nice Guy, what is new in video gaming?
So much, and thank you everyone for tuning in to episode 375 of Two Nerds in a Pod, nerdiest video game podcast in the galaxy. Mac, we've talked about prices going up on things. PlayStation 5 price went up, and that continues. Let's talk about more inflation and prices going up. This is on GameSpot.com, written by Darren Bonthuys. I hope I pronounced that correct, Darren. Darren writes, price hikes have been felt across the tech industry lately, and the Meta Quest 3 mixed reality headset is the next piece of premium hardware that's about to get more expensive. Meta announced that its Quest 3 headset will increase from $500 to $600 for the 512GB model, while anyone looking to grab an entry-level Quest 3S headset can expect to pay an extra $50 for the 128GB and 256GB models when the new prices kick in on April 19th. Meta says that the current global memory shortage has led to the price increases, but accessories will remain at their current prices. Quote, we're making this change because of the cost of building high-performance VR hardware has risen significantly, unquote, Meta said in a statement. You know, we could talk about if we believe this is the reason why, if it's really costing more, but I more want to talk about the current state of VR, and it's not something I've kept up with as much as I thought I would when I bought my Valve Index, which literally has some dust on the screen right now, even though I love it. I'm curious, because we've talked about this, but it's been 6 months, 8 months. VR, still a bright future, something that was a flash in the pan. What do you think?
I would struggle to call VR a flash in the pan, truly, because it's kind of had an ebb and flow. You know, there was a time when we had something like the Virtual Boy, an attempt to do VR gaming, or, you know, that didn't really pan out. And then we had some stuff in and around 2014. We had a lot of augmented reality games that would make use of, like, your phone, you know, with Google Cardboard. If y'all don't remember, it was basically instructions for how to make a holder out of cardboard so that you could wear your phone on your face and use it for the various things. I feel like, Nice Guy, I wouldn't call it a flash in the pan just because there is always been people who wanted to make this work. And I think there will always be people who see the potential in this as a medium. But I don't know what's holding us back. Because I have experienced, thanks to you, I've experienced Half-Life Alyx. And that is
amazing.
An amazing example of just how good VR-spaced storytelling can be. I think that we're still being held back by some of the hardware constraints of, like, the lack of comfort for long experiences.
I agree.
It's hard to have good, engaging stories that you have to pull yourself out of regularly to take a breather, you know? And I will say, I think that even though it's struggling right now to hold on to us as gamers, I think that's more an issue of comfort rather than it is an indictment of the medium itself. That's just my take. But dude, you're way more in it. Tell me more about what you think.
It's interesting, man, because as someone who still plays on occasion, but not as frequently, like the front of my Valve Index does have some dust on it. I feel like with VR, there's a very, very hardcore audience that will play a game like a Pavlov, which is like Call of Duty in VR, and they'll do it competitively. And they have, in fact, I kind of want to grab this real quick to show the people. Mac, I don't even know if I've ever showed this to you. So they'll buy like a gun stock.
Oh, okay.
Like this. I bought this a while back from a company, and I love it. And it has the little arm thing and everything. So you put your controllers on it, and then you can aim, and it's much more accurate than if you were just freehanding it, right? So there's a hardcore community that's into that type of stuff. But then there's the Meta Quest. Not that it's not a hardcore headset, but there's people who have it and they play Beat Saber. They play, you know, Playroom. They play like all these games that are more designed for a casual audience. But I feel like it hasn't really caught on to that in-between level of gamer. And I feel like that's where there's some significant money, is people who really like video games and aren't just doing it all day or occasionally. So I feel like that's where VR has failed. Now, to your point, Half-Life Alyx, amazing experience, 6 years old. Mm-hmm. And if you were to look at any other piece of hardware and say that the killer app for it came out 6 years ago and there hasn't really been anything as good since, I think that that hardware would be dead. But for some reason, VR has stuck around, and I have high hopes that it will still be here in 10, 15, 20 years, not just for meetings, but for gaming, for the mid-level gamer.
And not just for distance comedy clubs.
Dude, you know what? And that's when I was really, really thinking in COVID. I was like, you know what? There's comedy clubs in VR. We can still perform. We can work out material. We can still get paid. The metaverse is coming. And I really believed that it was. I don't think that we're moving that direction anymore.
Really? I know this isn't strictly speaking VR, you know, gaming, but like, you know, why don't you think the metaverse is moving that? Why don't you think we're moving that direction anymore?
Well, there's a couple reasons. I think one, to your point, people, the hardware's not comfortable. It's just not comfortable to sit for 3 hours, 2 hours and play with that headset on, any headset. And then the second reason is we're not stuck at home anymore. We can get out. During COVID, a lot of people were doing social stuff in VR, and some still do, but it's just not as needed at this point. And plus, Ready Player One, I can't remember what year came out, but it was like, all that stuff was like a perfect storm of, hey, this is what the movie shows can happen, and now a lot of us have these headsets. And then it just kind of fell off due to circumstances. So that's my take. I love VR. I hope it has a great future. I don't like that the price is going up for anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can 100% agree with that. I don't have a VR setup. I would like to have one someday, and that would be harder if the prices for it continue to rise.
It's just not feasible for something that's so uncomfortable and is really a novelty item. So, Mac, next news story. This is on GameSpot.com as well by Heidi Camps, and this is a feel-good story. I'm actually going to send you this video later because I think it's really well done. We're all about game preservation here on the podcast, and I think that's something we don't really debate. We both like that. So This is what Heidi writes. While Nintendo has been a prominent force in the game industry for decades, it took some time before they became the absolute powerhouse they are today. Long before their dominance in home consoles, Nintendo manufactured playing cards, toys, and various gadgets. During the 70s and 80s, they invested heavily in creating coin-operated entertainment for arcades. Even years before Donkey Kong became a company-defining hit, Nintendo was doing some wild things in the arcades. Wild Gunman 74, named such by gaming historian Kate Willert to avoid confusion with other Nintendo products bearing the same name, was engineered by Nintendo's legendary creator and inventor Gunpei Yokoi. It was a massive light gun game that used full motion video to depict Wild West quick draw shootouts with outlaws. Let's skip ahead. But when Canadian arcade collector and repair expert Callan Brown got a hold of some of the original Wild Gunman 74 reels used in the arcade machine from an eBay auction, he felt a need to try and restore it to its full working glory, which he documented in the video below. Mac, bottom line, this gentleman restored a rare FMV arcade game. And I don't even think there's a debate here. I just think that this is awesome, that people have this level of passion to do this kind of stuff.
Absolutely. And I think the thing that I'm most excited about is not only did he do it, it sounds like he clearly documented the processes that he went through.
Yes.
Not just for, is this a fantastic resource for preserving the wild, you know, the Gunman game from 1974, but also if you find yourself in a situation where you could potentially restore something, this almost functions a bit like a step-by-step or a how best practices or such like that. This is fantastic.
And Mac, I know you have the experience of having worked in an arcade at one point. Mm-hmm. If there was one game that you could own, and I'm not talking about on a Raspberry Pi, I'm not talking about, I'm talking about like, this is a great game, but maybe also you like the artwork. Maybe you also really like the hardware. You just want to have that cab. You know, money's no object, space, feasibility. Like, what would it be, man?
Pump It Up.
Pump It Up.
It's a dancing game.
Okay. Is it two or four player? One player?
It's two player. Although you can also play it one. Pump It Up. They have several different versions of the arcade cabinet. It's nowhere near as prolific as Dance Dance Revolution, as DDR, but it is my preferred, my favorite, and I had one of the original cabs. You know, dude, there's also a... I don't know where it is now, but, like, you remember where we used to live, right?
I do remember, yeah.
Just about 50 miles south of us, there was another arcade that, after my arcade closed, they sold most of that stock, including the cabinet, and it went down to that, you know, to that fun center. And I went back there a couple of times, and my scores were still on top.
That's awesome.
Which was so great. And I remember walking in there one time and being like, hey, I don't know if you're going to keep this arcade cabinet forever, but please, and I gave them my contact info. I was like, please reach out to me if you're going to get rid of it. If you're going to sell it, if you're going to whatever, just give me the chance to make a bid on it, okay?
Sure.
And they never did reach out to me. And last time I went, it was not on the showroom floor. So,
oh, no.
Sorry, I've gone on a tangent. But yes, absolutely, Pump It Up. I would love that. I've always dreamed of having one. Do I have the space for it? Absolutely not. Do I have the money for it? Probably not. But would I love it?
Expensive.
Yes. I wouldn't sell a kidney for it, but I'd miss it. Oh, man, I want it. What about you, nice guy? What's the arcade cabinet that you would want to have?
It's really tough, man. If I had to pick just one, and I don't know if it's one that I would even play all the time, but I have a certain nostalgia for Gauntlet Legends.
Hmm.
Just some really cool memories of playing that at arcades with my brother and with friends. And the idea of eating food to stay alive. And because basically in that version of the game, your health goes down with time so that you put more quarters in. And so the only way to really stay alive without more money is eating food. So we had some funny experiences, some frustrating experiences.
Food is good.
Yeah, food is good. I agree, man. And that's a quote from the game. So that'd be it for me. Mac, one last thing I want to talk about just for like a couple minutes, if you're okay with that. One last news story. This is on Kotaku.com, written by Zach Zweizen. And this is cool because it's about a game I really like. Remember the classic Lay's potato chip slogan, "Bet you can't eat just one." It was quite a claim, but for most people, it was accurate. I feel confident that Vampire Crawlers, an official card-based spinoff of Ponko's Vampire Survivors, developed by Nosebleed Interactive, could make a similar claim in its marketing. I doubt most who play Vampire Crawlers will be able to do just one run and walk away. Instead, they'll do one more, and then another, and then maybe one more, and then they'll realize it's 2 a.m. on a work night and go to bed. Mac, this game is launching on April 21st on PC, PS5, Switch, Switch 2, Xbox, and Game Pass. It's a card-based roguelite dungeon crawler set in the same universe as the auto-shooter main game that quickly became a hit back in 2023. Mac, my question for you is this. Did you ever play Vampire Survivors? And what do you think about their strategy? This game was like $2.99. They had all these DLCs that came out for like $1, $2. Now they're coming out with Vampire Crawlers, same universe, $10 game. Are they charging us too much, or have they earned our money at this point?
So I did not get onto the Vampire Survivors wagon. Now, nothing against it whatsoever. It just, I just never really picked one up. I know that so many people got into it, and at $2.99, such an easy, easy point of entry. Not expensive at all. I think it worked and has worked great for them. And I think, do we know what this one, Vampire Crawlers, is supposed to be price-wise?
I believe that $10 price point, but it is going to be on Game Pass, right? So someone who has a Game Pass subscription can play it and it will be included.
Well, hurrah for those people who have Game Pass. Yeah, I just don't know, dude. I've heard so many good things about the games that they make, and so many people enjoyed Vampire Survivors that I think they're likely to see a lot of success with this new game, but I just don't really have enough personal interaction to say more than that. Wish them the best of luck, though.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'll say this in like 30 seconds. So I once heard someone say that if you're going to release a comedy special, you should do it for free. And if you're not a known entity, right? And I've seen success in that myself. I've seen peers have success with that. You put something on the internet, maybe you get some residuals, and it gets a lot of views. And I think with Vampire Survivors, they did a very, very similar business model. They said, we're going to put this out. It's not going to be free, but it is going to be very, very cheap. It's going to be very, very accessible at a $2.99 price point. And then 3 years later, after it gains popularity and people are really bought in and we've proven ourselves, we're going to say, hey, here's this new game. And it's going to be $10, which is still much cheaper than the average game out there, indie or otherwise, and probably has more content. So I'm totally cool with this. I'm excited to see what else they do. That's been our news for the week.
Thank you, Nice Guy, for taking us looking forward. Let's take a little look into the past with some gaming history. Over the past couple of weeks, we have had some fantastic games come out. Games that I love, that you love, that I think are universally beloved. And I think I have to start it with one of the strongest, one of the best games of all time. Mr. Nice Guy, Link to the Past.
Oh, yes, sir.
That's it. That's the tweet. Legend of Zelda, Link to the Past. Fantastic. There are some games that truly transform a genre, and I think Link to the Past absolutely did. The move, the change to be pure, to have that isometric viewpoint preserved throughout the whole thing. They had fiddled with perspective in the past. Obviously, the original Zelda had a top-down look. Zelda 2 had top-down at points and side at points. And I think Zelda 2 doesn't get the kind of love that it should. I think there are some... I think it's better than a lot of people say that it is, but still good to a great game. But Link to the Past, I think, really took those themes, took those things. There is just one thing, just one bit that I think really needed some more time in the development oven. And that is, Nice Guy, it was one of the earlier temple bosses. The name of the villain escapes me at the moment. The name of the monster, rather. I want to say there's like Moldorn or something, but it was like a round sort of scuttly type guy that moved around in areas, and you had to get his tail was where he was vulnerable. But he would constantly like knock you off.
Okay, I know which one you're talking about.
So frustrating. That boss, always, whenever I do a playthrough of Link to the Past, I always struggle with that one. And I feel like it's bad boss design, but maybe it's bad boss design just because I don't like it. I don't know. Mr. Nice Guy, in a strange twist, do you have a least favorite boss from Link to the Past?
From Link to the Past specifically? I don't have a least favorite boss from Link to the Past specifically, but I will say this. I have amazing, amazing memories of the game because at the time, I mean, the Super Nintendo has such a vast library.
Oh, yeah.
But Link to the Past, clearly one of the top five. And I remember borrowing it from my uncle and just being blown away graphically, with the audio, with the gameplay. It was a journey. And it was one of the first games I played where I felt like I was on a journey.
Mm.
Great game.
Yeah, fantastic game. Well, let's scoot a little bit farther forward in time for the OG Xbox back in 2005, a title called Jade Empire, made by BioWare, same people who did Knights of the Old Republic 1 and 2. But Jade Empire, fantastic game in my opinion, has that RPG, but also very much couched in sort of Chinese mythology. So it has obviously kung fu and a lot of fighting styles, your various elements. I think I'm forgetting off the top of my head when... in the timeline, Last Airbender came out, but it very much had a similar vibe in that Last Airbender, the cartoon, had these sort of each different elemental style had a different real life type of discipline of martial arts that it was based off of. And in Jade Empire, you had a lot of the same thing where you would change over to like a different element or a different fighting style, and it definitely looked distinctly different. And it was just fun mechanically, fun visually, just a great game. If y'all get a chance to play it, Jade Empire is definitely one of Mac's top games. Nice guy, I don't know if Jade Empire is one that you've played before.
Not one that I was into, but cool to hear you talk about it.
No worries. It's good. If you get a chance, go for it. One that I do think you've played, though, from 2009, one of the early sort of indie marketplace titles, a little game called Braid.
Dude, Braid is awesome, and you're the one who recommended it to me.
Back in the day. Yeah, no, good stuff. If you haven't, it's very much all entirely side-scrolling and platforming, but obviously every single chapter plays a little bit with time in various ways. And throughout it, you have the ability to rewind time. Very fun, very enjoyable. But like I said, every single chapter of the game puts in new twists. It's a good time. It's a good time. I think just one last one to highlight that came out in mid-April 2014, a little game called Broforce. Funny, irreverent, very much based on a send-up of all the sort of 80s action flicks, but still fun, especially with a friend.
Very satirical.
Very satirical. It's dripping in satire. But yeah, Mr. Nice Guys, those are just some of the fun titles from this last couple of weeks in April of years before.
Nice. Love it. Love it. And I apologize. When the episode started, I didn't have the chat pulled up. Thank you for all the comments on VR and on other topics. Love reading your commentary. Would have read some out loud had I seen them. But we appreciate everyone who's here today. So, Mac, next up, it's time for our topic of the week, a segment where we talk about something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it. Mac, we're going to talk about a couple different themes with this one. Ethics in gaming, mm-hmm. but also live service games. And which we prefer, like between a game that has a continuous story with continuous content, or a game that is released on an annual, or let's say biannual, not biannual, like every other year basis.
Mm.
Like which one would we rather have? So here's the article. This is on GameSpot.com, written by Eddie Mackick. Here's what Eddie writes. Shuhei Yoshida, the 30-year PlayStation veteran who left the company in 2025, has shed more light regarding the situation that culminated in his eventual exit from the company. He said at the Alt Games event recently in Australia that after 11 games, I can't read today, Mac, 11 years leading worldwide studios, he was fired from the role. Quote, Jim Ryan wanted to remove me from first party because I didn't listen to him, he said. He asked me to do some ridiculous things and I told him no. For context, everybody, Jim Ryan was the head of PlayStation. He retired in 2024. Supposedly he fired Shuhei Yoshida, who is well known and well beloved in the industry because of this. Herman Hulst, the co-founder of Killzone and Horizon Studio Guerrilla Games, succeeded Yoshida, with Yoshida taking over as the leader of PlayStation's team heading up support for external independent creators. Yoshida previously talked about how he had no choice but to take on the indie-focused job. And Mac, I'm going to have to paraphrase because there's so much written here. But effectively, Ryan reportedly gave a mandate, Jim Ryan, that Sony Studios build live service games to capitalize on the trend. And this was said to have upset a number of developers. Now, Mac, people point to Helldivers 2. They point to some other games as successes in the live service space. Others would point to Concord, which, as we know, came out and was shut down like a couple weeks later. Mm-hmm. I would also point to The Last of Us online game as something that was supposed to be a live service that didn't succeed. So let's start there. And chat, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Live service or concrete releases?
I'm a much bigger fan of the concrete releases, of something being out there. Although I do recognize that live service can be fun, can be good. Many, many people have played games like EverQuest, World of Warcraft. These are all games that have relied on a monthly subscription and have done quite well. I think it's two different target audiences. There are people who want to play the same game and have updates to bring in new things every so often. And then there are people who want to experience a game see a narrative, go on a journey that has a distinct beginning, middle, and end. Not exclusively, but I think that the different methods appeal to two different types of art that we want to experience. At least that's the story I'm gonna tell myself as to why, you know, it takes all sorts to make a live service game work. What about you, dude?
So it's interesting because I play both. I play Helldivers. Mm-hmm. I also play other games that are quote unquote live service. And I don't know if we are where we are today without live service games, Mac.
Mm.
You know, okay. When we think live service, we think Destiny. We think maybe Overwatch, Helldivers 2. We think about games like that. But think about a game like a League of Legends that has, been around since, 2009 or something like that. Think about a game like a Counter-Strike that has continually been updated and has a competitive scene.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we have some of the games that we have today if not for those predecessors that have shaped the gaming industry. In terms of what I prefer, I like both. I really, really like both. If I had to pick one, I'd probably pick like a concrete game that comes out every other year where we get content for a year and then we get a new version. But I like the stuff that goes on for 3 or 4. I just am not going to be the hardcore person that only plays one
mm-hmm.
game.
Let me share something that Ishmobile says, his perspective in the chat here on live service versus concrete. He says, I don't have enough time for live service games continually. I need something I can at least pretend I will complete one day. Real-time shooters or strategies can get me for a bit, but not for the long haul. And we did not, Ishmobile and I did not coordinate our perspective beforehand.
Sure,
But I feel very much like that says better than I was saying my own take. One of the things that concerns me generally about live service games, I wonder what happens to an account that you don't maintain continuously.
Sure.
Like, how much of your things are retained? I know that a lot of live service games not wanting to maintain things, I've always wondered what happens to your account details or account information if you stop for, 6 months, a year. Do you lose your characters? Do you lose your levels? I've always kind of wondered, and I don't know as I've ever thought to ask before.
I think it depends on the game, right?
For sure.
If they're charging you to keep access, then you're probably either paying to not play it, or they just delete your character, or it goes into the void. So I'm with Ishmobile. Like, I agree with the vast majority of what he says. I play Battlefield 6. I have a group of dads who I play with. I can't play it every day. I don't have the time or the attention span. But when we play, we have a really, really good time. Now, it's not a live service game, but it's that exact same concept. I don't know how people have been playing World of Warcraft for a long, long time, 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
But that's awesome and good for them. And I wish that I had the time and attention span to find one game and really be into it. I want to read Galvatron's comment, because I think this is super insightful. And this is something that I believe to the core, and I see this every day. Galvatron wrote in the chat, "Let me impart a life lesson. Never believe a story until you hear the other side first. So many tales and narratives have been debunked after hearing from the other party." He says, I'd like to hear Jim Ryan's side. No one deserves the benefit of the doubt, including Yoshida. And that's a super interesting perspective. And this is something that I preach to my kids, to my friends, to people I know all the time. When someone starts talking trash, if you know me, you know that I will excuse myself from the situation. Because I don't like when people say bad things about someone who is not there to defend themselves. And I try not to do that too.
That's why we always talk trash about Galvatron to his metaphorical face.
Yeah, that's right. We're always mean to your face. I'll look you in the eye, Galvatron, through my camera and tell you that I think you're being crazy. In all seriousness, there's a lot of truth to this. Just because someone is beloved and someone is perceived as the victim doesn't mean that their narrative is true, and it's certainly not the only narrative. There's so much perception that goes into this. So thank you for that reminder, Gene.
Yeah.
Mac, any other comments on this story generally?
I'm so glad that you mentioned that one from Galvatron. I will say that's something I definitely follow in the legalese side of things as well. You'll always get somebody who says and hypes things and puts things out there as being like, oh, I was the wronged party. And hopefully you get a chance to hear the opposite side, to somebody makes the complaint and you get the response.
Right.
That's one of the things I do really love about doing the legalese segment each time, is because sometimes we'll like read something in an episode and then 6 months later, because law moves really glacially slow, we'll hear more about like what's going on. And it just goes, you know, if you listen to Sony, they're just like, oh my gosh, Cox Communications, the internet service provider, is practically eating babies. And then Cox Communications is just like, hey, we kicked a bunch of people off of our service, you know, like, I'm sorry we didn't kick people off the internet hard enough for you guys, but we're not your police. And then back and forth, and you know, you get that sort of thing, and it takes shape over time. So thanks for that, Galvatron, and thanks, Mr. Nice Guy, for throwing it out there. It's 100% a great call.
Yeah, Galvatron made another really deep point, and then we got to move on after this. But he says, and this is another side effect of rising prices, the people can afford to pay for games, adults. I think he meant to say the people who can afford to pay for games, adults, don't have time to play all the games, and the people who do have time to play all the games, kids, can't afford to pay for them. There's some truth to that, but that's a partial truth. I tell my kids all the time,
I already bought it!
Yeah, I already bought it! Not just because I'm a gamer, but because my library from PlayStation Plus, years and years and years of going in and claiming every game every month, even if I wasn't going to play it, 3 games a month over, you know, several years, results in a huge game library of stuff that they will have access to that they do not have time to play. So there's some truth to what you're saying.
Yeah.
Mac, any last thoughts before we move on, sir?
Loved the conversation topic. Thanks, Mr. Nice Guy.
Awesome. That has been our topic of the week.
All right. Well, now we turn to a crowdfunding project that's trying to get off the ground. We call this Kick or Kickstart. And I've just dropped a link in the chat to this project by a little group out of Leipzig, Germany, called Pasta Projects. This is Cubo, a puzzle adventure on a Rubik's Cube world. So what are we looking at here? This is a isometric exploration puzzle game, and as you can probably see as you're looking at it now, it does have a sort of Rubik's Cube mechanic to it, in that there are sort of discrete sections of the world that are essentially on a Rubik's Cube that you can shuffle around in order to open up new paths along your way. The art is very much inspired by Studio Ghibli, which I've been on a bit of a kick lately, so obviously this appeals to me. I love Rubik's Cubes, that appeals to me. Isometric exploration, enjoy that. What's not to love? The game itself is, like I said, Pasta Projects. That's kind of a brand new indie studio. This would be the first game being made, and the first game, first Kickstarter project as well. If you're interested, they have a goal for 10,000 euros to bring this game to life, which comes out to about 11,600 US dollars. It would be a $22 minimum buy-in. There was a previous early bird price that was for 18 bucks, but that, you know, elapsed at the beginning of this week. The expected release date is quarter one of next year, so not quite a full year away. And we're dealing with a solo developer with another person kind of helping on the audio and such. I've got some more stuff to say about it, Mr. Nice Guy, but anything stand out to you from what you've seen?
There's a lot that stands out. This is almost exactly everything that I'd want in a video game. This looks fantastic. It's a unique idea. I don't think I've ever seen anything like this conceptually.
I think the closest thing I've seen conceptually was Arranger, which we both love.
Yes. I was going to say, it's almost like an Arranger-Cubert hybrid. it those two really, really, there's some elements of it here. I guess one thing that bugged me a little bit is you say it's a solo dev, but someone else is helping with the music. Then it's not a solo dev game. And I don't know if they're pitching it that way. If they are, you know, shame on you. But I'm willing to overlook
it. No, that's my description. Because, I respect and think that music is a very important part of a game. But it's very much he's doing everything except the music. And it's just we can't all be, gifted like Nicholas to do everything. But
that's fair. Shout out to
know.
Cave Story. Yeah, I get it. There's a couple things that bother me about this, and it's not about things they've done wrong. It's about the fact that this looks fantastic, and it's only about halfway to its goal, and it's also listed as a project we love on Kickstarter. So I guess I'm confused as to why this hasn't picked up more steam. Q1 of next year, it's not going to be done by then, with a $12,000 amount. And then as much as I bet money this will be a good game, I'm also going to bet money that this will be delayed. Mac, the sole reason I would not kickstart this, even though I really like it, is because I'm still waiting on Mina the Hollower. I'm still waiting on a game called Hazelnut Bastille. Y'all can Google it. And there's a third game I can't remember the name of that I'm waiting for. And they were all from people who looked reputable. That's what I got.
You know me. There has to be a playable demo if I'm to consider giving a game a kickstart instead of a kick. And I am proud to say that this does have a playable demo. As a matter of fact, I do appreciate that the image, the thumbnail, if you will, as you pull it up, says play the prototype now on it. And you don't have to scroll very far at all to get the link to the prototype. And that sort of thing does need to be forward. I did have the opportunity to play the playable demo. A lot of the artwork is so clearly handcrafted, but there's also a lot of points where you're running into placeholder stuff. Because the stuff that is well done is so well done, it was really rather glaring and jarring as you were playing through and you ran into something that wasn't. That wasn't actually finished yet, or just had a non-animated placeholder character to stand in there.
Sure.
As a concept, I thought it was really great. I really liked it, and I wanted more, because the demo really only had, say, 10-ish minutes of demo playtime. And I also wanted the mechanics to feel more finished. It could have just been my experience. Maybe it's my aged system. Maybe it's my failing eyes. Who knows? But it really felt like there was a lot of polish that was needed. Maybe not even polish, but rounded corners, it felt like they hadn't yet sanded off the edges, much less put a layer of lacquer on. In a lot of areas. Some places looked really good, and so it was really obvious as you went to a spot where it needed more work. And I agree with you. I think this is definitely going to be delayed. I think this is the type of game that, even if it meets its goal, is probably going to be delayed by a year or more.
I agree, 100%.
Just because what becomes clear from playing the demo is that I don't personally think that it was ready to be shown yet as a demo.
Really?
Yeah, I think about some of the demos that I have played on a Kickstarter, and they just felt more like they focused on making sure everything in the demo looked good, looked great, and was snappy and worked well. This felt like it had some of the core there, and just didn't have a lot of, a lot of the other things. I just don't think it was ready is my take on it. So I really want it. I'm going to have to say kick it, though.
Interesting.
I hope that this is successful, but I think it needs more time to bake. I think he needs to go back to the drawing board, spend some more time working on it before he starts asking. And I think that is the heart of why it hasn't gotten past the halfway mark yet, because I think people are looking at the demo and thinking, I'll hold off, as opposed to being ready to jump fully in.
I would add to that super briefly. I think that a big part of it is that people don't price based on the market anymore. People price based on their expenses and how much they want to make if they're going to break even or sell X number of copies. And I think that's what's happening here, because $22 for a game like this, I think it's a little bit steep. Given that we're in an age of Game Pass, we talked about Vampire Survivors earlier. You know, games like that are coming out and giving us, you know, quote unquote, infinite content that mm-hmm. we can play and play and play and play, and then they add more stuff. I feel like something like this, probably closer to like a $12.99 type of thing. So
yeah,
and I still kickstart it though. I think it's okay. It looks great.
Hey, I think I don't know how much content will be present at the end of this. You know, in the game's final form, but I would love to see it when it's finally completed. Sorry that I just can't, it just doesn't quite get me there, but, a kick it from me, a kickstart from Mr. Nice Guy. As always, we wish everybody the best of luck and Pasta Projects. We hope that that you're able to, bring to life the vision you've had from the outset. So good luck, my dude. Good luck.
Awesome. Well, hey, now it's time for a segment we like to call Nerdflex.
Woo-hoo.
A segment where you, the viewers, try to stump the host. Sometimes you do, sometimes you do not. Galvatron's here, probably typing up a question with 26 answers. If you're here live, you have a job to do, no pressure. But if you have a multiple choice gaming related question you'd like to put in the chat, please do. And Mac and I will use nothing but our noggins to try to answer that question. We'll do three of them. Mac, we're going to start with the test bank.
Mr. Nice Guy, is it cool if we start with the sound test first?
Oh, there it is. Yeah, it is cool. Absolutely.
Yeah. Today is a sound test episode, episode 375. We say goodbye to the mystery sound from episode 335. So you get final crack at it if you want to play that for us.
Yeah, let me pull it up and see if I can guess. All right, let's see what this sounds like. Interesting. It sounds like some type of goo or something like being eaten. It almost made me think of something Pac-Man-ish. Like the ghosts.
You know, you're dangerously close, but only in a dad jokey kind of way.
In a dad jokey kind of way. I'm going to go with... Oh, man. I'm going to just go Pac-Man. I have no idea.
So this is from Pikmin. This is one of the little Pikmin drowning in water.
Wouldn't have gotten that because I'm not a big Pikmin guy. But all right, well, now we know.
This is the new one. Good luck, y'all. You know, let us know if you know it and we'll send you a prize.
All right, here we go. I'm pressing play. Ooh, it sounds like something fun.
Indeed.
All right, well, cool. So we got our test bank pulled up. Here is the first question, Mac. It is a special round, and the first question is name two augmented reality games,
wow.
Which is very much in theme with what we've been talking about. Mac, what do you got?
Oh, gosh. Augmented reality games, I think Ingress is a good one to start with.
Okay, now this is going to be cheating because I don't know that there is a game by this name, but I'm almost certain that there is and that I've played it. Paintball?
Hmm.
Like playing paintball in your house amongst the furniture. Yeah, I'm going to go with that.
Pokemon Go?
Yeah, there's also, and I don't know if this is going to count because I can't remember the exact name, but it's Mario Kart, where you actually have the cart set up in your house and you use it like a race car. You set up different points and you build the course, but it's augmented reality on the TV screen. It makes it look like Mario Kart.
Yeah, I've got a vague recollection of that. I never played it, but I remember seeing it at one of those Nintendo Direct things.
Yeah.
So, very cool. Honestly, Nice Guy, I think that's all I know games-wise of augmented reality. It says two, and that's four between the two of us. So
yeah, so we're good.
So we're good.
So here,
what is it?
Here is what we got, Mac. The answer's on the back. Ingress, Pokemon Go, Harry Potter, Wizards Unite. Zombies Run, Minecraft Earth.
Oh, Zombies Run, of course. Man, I loved that game when it came out. Got me off the couch, got me running. Very cool. Oh, well, we've got a question from Galvatron.
Go for it. My chat is loading up.
Which of the original three playable Final Fight characters was left out of the first Super NES port? Was it Cody, Hager, or Guy? And I don't remember who's who in Final Fight.
I don't either. Yeah. It's all pixels. Gee, come on. I guess every game is all pixels. But Cody, Hager, or Guy? You know, they say when you're taking tests that you should pick C. Mm-hmm. You know, C is the answer 60% of the time. They give you two wrong answers, a right one, and then a wrong one. And I'm going to go with C. I'm going to go with Guy.
All right. I'll go with you on Guy.
All right, G, let us know. Guy, final answer?
Oh, we know this is going to be a good one. Ah, hey, we got it right. It was Guy. But we're not cheaters.
Okay, so this is an easy one, I think. This is from the test bank. It's a Nintendo question, and now I'm not going to remember the name of it. What is the name of the Wii download service for older emulated games? What is the name of the Wii download service for older emulated games?
I wonder if it's the Wii Virtual Console. Is that a thing?
I think you're right. I think it might just be Virtual Console. But it's interesting because that was on the Wii and also on the 3DS.
Mm.
So I hope they're not looking for like Wii Store or Nintendo Store, but I think Virtual Console is the right answer.
All right. Final answer.
Hey, that was an easy one. It was Virtual Console. So what did we get today? We got we got all of them actually today.
We did. Clean sweep. We did it, nice guy.
3 of 3, and that has been Nerdflex.
All right. Well, now we turn to a little bit of legalese.
Legalese.
Mr. Nice Guy, I have a special little lawsuit for us today. Jobst v. Mitchell.
Tell me more. Your boy Mitchell.
Yeah, our boy Billy Mitchell. Except it's from the opposite direction. And Mr. Nice Guy, am I on Billy Mitchell's side for once?
I would like to see that because I think he's a legend despite his personality.
We will see. So, as you know, I am on the record unabashedly, and I still maintain that Billy Mitchell never behaves like what I would call a civil person. He is rude, arrogant, and often cruel to others, and he has been known to lie and cheat at video games. He is an amazing player, but he is not the best player, though he regularly holds himself out as such. Carl Jobst, on the other hand, he's a YouTuber, and my interaction with his work is that his shtick is somebody who researches and makes videos about people getting caught cheating at video games. And a few years back, Billy sued Carl in Australia for Carl's claim that another YouTuber was pushed to suicide by Billy's constant bullying of this man.
That's
terrible.
You know,
as a result of Billy's fragile ego surrounding his contested Donkey Kong scores. Now, before the lawsuit concluded, there seemed to be an understanding that Carl was being sued for saying that Billy was a cheater, rather than these claims about the, you know, bullying somebody to suicide. A perception that was not very well assisted by Carl, as it was even my understanding of the suit, until I actually read the court documents myself, because it became very clear from the lawsuit filed in Australia by Billy against Carl that the lawsuit was about that specific claim that Billy had pushed somebody else to suicide.
Sure.
When that was decided in Billy's favor, Billy took what you could call a victory lap, Mr. Nice Guy, and his conduct during that time was kind of what you might expect, including things like offering 15% off of his hot sauces, because Billy owns a hot sauce business, in case you didn't know, with the discount code CRYBABY, announcing it with big pictures of Carl's face, showing cartoon images of himself, Billy, hanging Carl by his neck.
Terrible. Terrible.
The classiest type of stuff, I think we can agree. So Carl Jobst is now suing Billy, and the complaint is only about 26 pages long, and it really boils down to this. Billy said a lot of very mean and untrue things, is the claim, about Carl after the lawsuit. Things that Billy knew were false, and those things harmed Carl and his ability to make a living in his profession of a YouTuber, and that is defamation. However, I don't think this lawsuit's going to go that far, Mr. Nice Guy, for two really big reasons. One is that the claims aren't especially solid. They are, you know, kind of reprehensible and a bit scummy, but I think the core of this would be trying to make it clear that Billy knew the things that he was saying were lies, even though they were in poor taste, but that he knew that Billy knew that he was saying things to harm Carl, and that those things, with reckless disregard for the truth. And I think that would be really tough to show. And number two, that's going to make this tough to get across the line, is that Carl is representing himself. And that's the much bigger issue as a pro se plaintiff. According to a study of litigation from 1998 all the way to 2017, the numbers really shake out that if one side has a lawyer, and Billy has a lawyer, and the other side is a pro se litigant, that's the legal term for being, you know, self-represented, that the self-represented side loses about 90% of the time. And that's even with really good facts, because it is basically a full-time job to know all the little ins and outs of the related field to which you're trying to make a suit in. And even more than 50% of pro se litigants don't actually get past initial motions to dismiss. And we can talk about maybe why that is beyond the scope of this podcast. It probably shouldn't be so stark. It probably shouldn't be that a pro se litigant loses 90% of the time. Frankly, we should probably have a legal system that isn't so tilted against the small litigant. But the current reality and the world that we currently live in is that. And I'm afraid that those two things combined aren't going to make much of a dent. And I think Carl is fairly well doomed in this aspect. I'll keep you updated if it doesn't, or if it winds up going very far, but at the end of the day, I think it's very much going to struggle. And I do see somebody asking about ChatGPT representing. I would actually love, I think it's a little bit outside of the scope of gaming, but there have been some interesting things on the scope of ChatGPT, people who use it for lawsuits, and the trouble it gets them into when they do that, because it is not good at maintaining factual information. Especially in high-stakes situations, there's more to say about that. You should look at the lawyers who have been sanctioned and disbarred for using ChatGPT and things like that. The point being is that I don't know who to root for in this situation, Mr. Nice Guy, but I'll keep you updated if something changes.
Well, it goes back to Galvatron's point earlier that there really are two sides to every story. So I remember when The King of Kong came out, the documentary, that if you haven't seen it, go watch it. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah. It's fantastic.
You know, it was Steve Wiebe versus Billy Mitchell, and the way that Billy felt he was portrayed in the movie is that he was portrayed as a villain. Now, we talked a couple weeks ago about the power of editing on this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
And there's absolute truth to that, that you can make someone look a certain way. You can make a movie or a podcast or a cartoon.
Yeah, why do you think Mr. Nice Guy always sounds like the villain here and I sound reasonable? It's because I'm the one who's doing the edit.
He does the editing. He edits out all of my intelligent points. No, I'm totally
That's
kidding.
Right.
Mac does a phenomenal job editing. But point being, you know, there's two sides to every story. Mm-hmm. And it'll be interesting to see what happens with this, as both of them say the other is wrong. But it sounds like in some ways both of them are making mistakes, right? Billy not responding in what I would consider to be a kind way. This other gentleman, for whatever reason, representing himself. Huge risk. Maybe it's a financial decision. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we will. Well, Nice Guy, that is what I had for today. Yeah, that's been Legalese.
Nice. I love it. I love it. I love it. Mac, thank you for sharing. And before we go, y'all, we have one last thing to talk about, which is what we've been watching and what we've been playing, where we talk about all the cool nerdy stuff we've been into across all platforms, whether it's books, whether it's movies, whether it's games, whether it's TV shows. Mac, oh, and if you're here live, let us know, because we're always looking for more nerdy stuff. Mac, what have you been into?
Well, let's see. As for playing, I beta tested a game that is unreleased. Well, beta tested a port of a game that is as yet unreleased. That was fun. I also got a... So there's this series I really like called Creeper World, and the newest game in the series was called Creeper World IXE. I managed to play through that over the past couple of weeks. Still a little bit on the fence of it. I think Creeper World 4 is the superior game at the moment, but, you know, having a good time. That's why I've been playing. As for watching, I've been watching a show called Delicious in Dungeon on Netflix, Taskmaster Season 21 on YouTube, and a Chinese drama called Snow Sword Stride that is quite enjoyable. I'm about halfway through it currently. So what about you, Mr. Nice Guy?
Well, you know what, Max? So we were talking about games that are games as service, which I don't know if just an ongoing multiplayer game falls in that category, but I've recently gotten back into a little game called Teamfight Tactics, which is a League of Legends offshoot where you play as the League of Legends heroes, build a team, and it's an auto battler. So you place them on the map, you upgrade them, you get different combinations of heroes to unlock different powers. It is so strategic, you would not believe, and it is free to play. It has a huge community of esports, of casuals, and I absolutely love it, and my brother plays too, so we've been doing a lot of that. As far as, I've been messing around with my Ain Thor again, Mac. I've been tinkering.
Nice.
Retro Gamecore, YouTuber who I watch a lot, put out a video on how to really make your Ain Thor look awesome in terms of the tinkering, and so I've been doing that.
Atomic Purple Case?
I don't have Atomic Purple Case. I have the SNES looking one, the gray.
Okay,
I probably
okay.
showed it on here before, but it's been a minute. And as far as watching, I'm getting back into Attack on Titan and some NBA playoffs. So
nice.
Well, Mac, why don't you take us home, sir?
All right. Thanks, everybody, for coming out and being part of the show, being here for episode 375, whether you were here in person or were listening after the fact. Remember, you're always welcome to come out. twitch.tv/2nerdsinapod. Be a part of the show. Be like Galvatron, Ishmobile, and all our other folks, and share your opinions and throw that nerdy trivia right at us. But until we see you next time at approximately 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Central, please remember to be excellent to each other and keep it nerdy. Bye.
Be kind. Love you all. Bye.